Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 527, Balls of St. Helios, recorded live on February 11th, 2016. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your other host, Biowolf.
And I'm GT.
And we are back with another fine episode of Podtacular, this week covering some more Halo campaign and a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of Halo news that we've gotten this week. Not much else to talk about, although we do have an announcement to make as well. But first things first, Bio, it's been a little while since we've had you on the show. Have you had any chance to get caught up with the Infinity's Armory? I know we talked last time that you're on, which I think was three episodes ago, and you hadn't gotten a chance to play Urban or Riptide. So have you had a chance to get in some with those?
Okay.
Some games with those?
So I'm going to say this now. Like, Halo is not going to give me those maps. I'm not exaggerating when I say this. I probably played 100 rounds of Arena and probably close to 75 rounds of Warzone in the last 2 weeks or so. I have not gotten either of them. I had to go into custom games to see Riptide. And,
well, Urban is Warzone Assault. It's not Warzone.
Well, that's what I meant. Like, this is what I meant. Like, Warzone Assault. I have not played it. I don't know why. I don't know if you've seen me tweet it out or if anyone that's following me see me tweet it out, but I tweeted out, I was like, is there something that I'm missing? Like, is there a specific playlist that you have to play in Arena or something to get these maps? Because I wasn't getting it. I mean, I've played Free For All, Team Slayer, just regular Slayer. I've played just about everything and I have not gotten any of them.
Shows up pretty regular in SWAT.
Well, I haven't played SWAT, so I'll try that.
Yeah, SWAT would be one. I would think that would come up in Slayer. I think you should have come up in Slayer.
I have not gotten it in Slayer. To be honest with you, I've gotten, and this is the first time I've ever seen this, I've gotten a map 5 times in a row while quitting out and then going back in to matchmaking.
Well, that actually increases your chances of getting the same map.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you stay in, you're likely to rotate a map because, yeah. Yeah, that would increase, well, because it would just place you into another random server that could just be created, and it could be like starting off of I'm not sure how the servers are configured. I'm not saying I know how they are configured, but my guess would be if they're maybe start spinning up a new virtual server, it could have a set rotation that the server is focused on, and you might just be hitting the start of one every single time.
Maybe. I don't know. It's really strange. And that was something I was kind of concerned about because I want to play them. Like, I do. Like, I want to play these maps. I went into custom games. Riptide looks pretty sick. I will say that. And playing with the Halo TBR in Warzone, because I was playing with Hatred, Dust, you kind of see me skip everyone by accident. not purposefully at all.
I looked to join on him and there wasn't a join, so you must have gotten it like just as they got out and they were changing up people or something, maybe.
Well, to be fair, it wasn't Hatred that I joined, it was Duquesne. So it
right.
whoever you were trying to join, it literally just said join up and Duquesne was like, hey, you should come play with us. I'm like, all right, sure, let's go. So I just joined him and that was in there. But Hatred was using the H2BR and he died and I picked it up. Ooh. I like it a lot. I can't wait to unlock that wreck. That wreck is...
A lot of people are liking it.
And the thing is, I like the Halo 2 BR a lot. It's not exactly something that... I rather have the Halo 5 BR, if that makes any sense, better than the Halo 2 one. It just feels more accurate. But the Halo 2 one and Halo 5, for some reason, feels amazing.
Honestly, between the two of them, they both... I mean, as far as kill times, they're almost identical. There might be one bullet difference between them. The feel of them, it is a lot different just because of the sound and the look. But as far as their functionality, they're almost identical. You know, I've picked up a few that have been dropped and played with them. And honestly, really, depending on the map, it's no advantage over just the standard BR.
No, I don't think there's any advantages over it. I do feel though that the Halo 2 BR is quicker to kill someone compared to Halo 5's BR. I do feel that, not in the sense of how many bullets it is to kill the person, but just length and how to kill someone, if that makes any sense.
So there was someone out there that did a comparison with the Halo 2 BR and the Halo 5 BR, and I think the Halo 2 BR was maybe 2 frames faster kill time. It was very small, but I think it had just an eek of a faster kill time than the Halo 5 BR.
Right.
Yeah, it's nothing that's going to win you or lose you a battle.
No.
Because you're most likely going to miss more bullets than that. You know, that was checking on a static target.
But if you got two people going after like if they're shooting it and trying to get it perfect, depending on server timing and ping, that could turn out a one-on-one fight.
Yeah, but you can't get a perfect with that Halo 2 BR.
What do you mean?
They don't have a perfect kill for it. Perfect kill medal for it.
Well, you might not get the medal, but you still get the perfect kill.
Like I said, the difference is so small. In 90% of the battles out there, it's not going to be an advantage because your accuracy is going to trump that much kill time.
True. And a lot of people are saying that they like the Halo 2 BR a lot more than the Halo 5. And I personally, I like the Halo 5 BR.
I do too. People like the sound and the look of it. And don't get me wrong, I like the sound and I like the look of it. I like the Halo 5 BR more.
See, it's weird because I was a huge fan of the BR, and not much has changed between the beta BR, you know, for Halo 5 into the actual game. For some reason, though, I felt that the Halo 5 BR and Halo 5 I liked more, and the only reason why I go back to it is because it felt more, what's the word I'm looking for? It felt more, not accurate, but it felt... I don't really know. I don't really know how to describe it.
Natural?
More stable?
Yeah. Like, it felt more smooth compared to the actual Halo 5 one that we have now. I don't know why. If there's anyone that can give me a statistic as to why that is, I'd love to know. But I'm really... I like the Halo 5 BR, but they made that switch a little bit, and I find myself going to other weapons other than just going to... the BR, and something that I've found that I'm really enjoying a lot more is the light rifle. That light rifle and me is a very deadly combination, I've been finding out. I can land head, like, I've probably, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, I've probably gotten between the, like, if I got a 25 kill game, I probably got 15 to 20 perfect medals while using that light rifle. Like, I love the feel of it.
Yeah, that light rifle's, it's a very powerful rifle. And you feel it when you pick it up.
Yeah.
Not to mention the awesome scope in, but anyway, it's almost like you can feel it hitting your opponent with the thump that comes out when you pull the trigger.
Yep.
I mean, it really feels like a powerful weapon. You know, they made it feel like a power weapon because that's what they moved it towards. I mean, it's not going to trump a rocket launcher, but man, it feels like it will.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, I think for all the Promethean weapons is they did such a good job of actually fleshing them out, whereas some of them really felt overpowered or useless in Halo 4. I feel that Halo 5, they nailed pretty much every single Promethean weapon in Halo 5.
Well, the bolt shot and suppressor in campaign, I won't hesitate to pick those up. Even when I'm playing Warzone, I will call in a suppressor just for the tracking option. And that thing it tears through people. You've got to, you know, you've got to be conscious of what you're doing because, you know, a pistol or an AR can still kill you, I think, a little bit faster than that suppressor does, but that thing will tear through some shields. I basically use it kind of like a support role. I'll poke my head around a corner, knock the shields off of somebody, and let one of my teammates finish them up.
Yeah, and I know for Warzone, I don't use them that often, but to what you were saying, I'll pick up a suppressor or a bullet shot and use them every now and then. So it's definitely one one of those things that they, I think they really fleshed them out for Halo 5. And just in the beta, when you had the light rifle, it just felt so much better than the light rifle in Halo 4. And like you said, it actually seemed like you were doing some damage. It felt like you were doing some damage just by the sound that it put out, especially when you were zoomed in.
Yeah, I always try to get that light rifle whenever I get a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Because
so just
it because of the way it feels when you fire it.
Right. So I did a quick poll in our chat, our Twitch chat, for the BRs, and the pretty much overwhelming majority is Halo 2 BR is preferred over the Halo 5 one. And Eric Ibu just said he got a perfect kill with the Halo 2 BR, so I'm guessing he's playing while he's listening to this.
Probably.
But it just, for me, Halo 2 BR, and I think one of the reasons why is the Halo 2 BR, the spread, and I mean, part of it is you're only on a tiny screen, so the accuracy was a little less than what it is now. But have the spread of the Halo 2 BR, and more so the Halo, or at least it felt like with the Halo 3 BR, it just seemed like the spread on those was so wide. And you have the BR in Halo 4 and Halo 5 being, or seemingly so much more accurate. I could just be saying this out of like nowhere, and I'm not justified anywhere with this, but it just feels like for the Halo 4 and the Halo 5 BR, there's just a lot more accuracy and the spread is a lot more closely. So I like those versions better.
Oh, I definitely agree with you. I couldn't hit crap with the Halo 3 BR.
That thing was a pain.
I mean, the funny thing is Halo 2 I could do decent with. I do better with the Halo 5 BR.
Yeah.
And the Halo 5 Halo 2 BR. Than I did with the original Halo 2 BR, if that makes any sense. But, and that could just be because
Halo 2, it's a lot, you're looking at a resolution that's a lot more tiny.
Well, I mean, even, I don't, honestly, right now, I'm not playing on any bigger screen than I was when I was playing Halo 2. Actually, I'm playing on a smaller screen than I was when I was playing in Halo 2.
But you have more fidelity now than you did back then. You have more pixels to see.
I also had a quicker refresh rate then, too. Because I was on a CRT.
No, it's 60 now and it was 60 then. And I think the game still output only 30 frames a second.
Yeah, on the console it did. But even in PC, you know, playing it on the PC, I noticed some changes. It played different because I was playing at 60 FPS, which I really like. And that's kind of where I got hooked on it. But my shot accuracy really didn't change a whole lot. Other than just getting better at actually using the controller. You know, me, just physically improving.
Right. It got a little bit easier for me whenever I went over to PC for Halo 2. It was because you had so much more screen fidelity on it. So my aiming got drastically better. And I could snipe in Halo 2 like it was no one's business. And I haven't had a good game where I could snipe until Halo 5.
Halo 5 sniper feels very good. I'll say that much. It feels really good.
I've been paying attention to some of these multi-kill, or not, no, anyway, the little videos people put together, you know, they get in doubles and triples with sniper rifles and stuff. I swear the hitbox when you've got a sniper rifle is the size of a warthog. I'm not joking. I can swear the reticle is like pointed at his, you know, just past his ear, not even on the helmet, and he gets headshot.
I don't know. See,
I think the hitboxes are a little different on the head.
They might be,
because I'm seeing shots get made that, you know, I've got to look at them two or three times just to make sure they actually had the reticle on their head, and sometimes they don't.
So are you looking at this from a safe film perspective or
just YouTube videos? Now, granted, this is not the highest quality video, but man, it just,
so it seems like there is a significant amount of bullet magnetism in this game. It really does. I don't know how much there is, because I think at one point they said that they relied which sprint, because I don't remember.
I remember somebody saying something about them increasing the bullet magnetism. or changing, I should say changing the bullet magnetism, but I can't remember where that came from.
So I also thought there was something that they said where they didn't rely on the reticle magnetism as much, where you actually had to aim a lot better in Halo 5 than you had to in past Halo games.
I don't know. I can't judge it because I'm not that good with a sniper, with the actual human sniper. Beam rifle I'm better with, but it just, it seems like that those snipe shots, some of them shouldn't happen. I don't, it total side note, but I mean, like with Norfang, you touch them, they're dead. It doesn't matter where you shoot them.
You have the damage boost, so yeah.
Yeah, you have the damage boost. It doesn't matter where you hit them. They're a one-shot kill. But just regular sniper rifles, I'm just seeing some kills that I'm not exactly sure they're headshots with the reticle over the head.
And I get the same thing, too. There's some shots that I make that I'm just like, what? I made that? And that's when I do Xbox record that. And there's, you can see in my timeline, there's plenty of clips of me getting snipes. And then there's other times where I'm so close and it's like, that didn't hit, really? So I don't know what it is that the magnetism kicks in or doesn't. I don't know what that formula or equation is or whatever they're doing to calculate that in the back end. But it does seem like at points there is a certain amount to a degree of bullet magnetism in the game. Eric, you were saying it's probably more magnetism on the sniper.
Yeah. The human sniper is the only thing I've noticed it on. I haven't noticed it on the beam rifle. I haven't noticed it on the Forerunner one. Brain fart. But anyway, of course, that one, it's more you shoot and sweep now instead of just hitting them.
Well, and Haas brought up an interesting point, too, where the Halo 5 headshot or the hitbox is, I guess, is bigger than it has been in the past, where it's like bigger than the actual head. So that might be part of it, too, for getting some headshots. Because there's also been a few instances where I've gotten headshots with Magnums or BRs, and it's to that point where you don't really believe what you're seeing, but you just take it and it's like, okay, cool. And then there's other points where you're running away and you think you're clearly behind the wall, yet they kill you with a headshot somehow. So that kind of makes some sense.
I've had plenty of those moments.
Yeah.
With the BR, I can, I don't see it. I don't notice it because I think BR, a spread of bullets. So I don't notice it as much with that. The only time I really notice it is when I'm looking at film of somebody using a sniper. But this, I'm not arguing with it. It just seemed odd. I have to start using a human sniper.
Yeah. Anyways, so there's a little bit of news, tiny bit of news for that we didn't cover last week. They did release a new community update, and we covered a little bit of this already that was in the last update. So the updates to matchmaking that they've done, we talked a little bit about them evaluating the service and making some updates to kind of the overall infrastructure. So we talked about that. I think we talked about the Warzone cost changes as well.
Mm-hmm.
And did we mention the new blue color?
Yes, we did mention the new blue color.
Yeah. Okay, so the only thing we really didn't cover... So the
blues don't blend in as well as they used to.
Right. So the only thing I don't think we covered in detail was the ball game types, right?
Right, we didn't talk about them.
That wasn't out yet. Okay, so new thing coming in February is the ball game type is basically what they're saying this is. So it kind of breaks down into anything that requires a ball is what this game type is going to be. So they're focusing on two different game modes with that. One is Assault, which is basically Neutral Bomb Assault. And the other one is, of course, Griff Ball. So they've put in a lot of effort trying to test out both game modes, making sure that there's options there for people to alter carrier traits and some other things that go on in games. So there's a few things that they've toyed around with. One of the things that's coming back, which a lot of people I think will like, is the ball carrier has a one-hit melee for Assault and likely for Griff Ball as well. So you still have that one-arm punch. The person carrying the ball does not have a weapon, so it's like traditional Assault and Griff Ball in that manner. They've actually introduced it to where for assault, the ball carrier has two thrusts. So they've been toying around with the carrier being able to get into a place and arm the bomb quietly, but also being able to get out if needed as well. And they've toyed around with the size of the hills and notifications on screen for enemy and ally teams and a bunch of different things that they're messing around with. They have a indication on when the ball is being armed. They also have a toggle on there so you can say you can have a marker saying wherever the ball carrier is at all times, or you never get an indicator, or similarly in CTF as it is right now in Halo 5, you get a marker whenever they get detected. So in CTF, if you shoot somebody, you get a little marker that says carrier, and it lasts for about, 10, 15 seconds, and then it goes away.
It's not real long, unless they continue to take fire, of course, but if they just get hit once and then not again, it doesn't last very long, because I've heard... I've heard the notification and turned and have not seen the marker, their waypoint above the head.
So I've seen this actually been done by pros too. Whenever they get hit, they'll throw the flag down and then pick it right back up. So the marker goes away.
I've seen that trick a couple of times.
So that's something that's pretty interesting too. They're continuing to mess around with the damage resistance, the ability for all the other players as well in the ball game type, and some other things as well. So in Assault, they obviously have ball throwing disabled, and in Griffball, they have it enabled. So there's things like that that you'd be able to turn on and off in game type. There's also going to be multiple delivery zones that you can carry a ball to, so something like Ricochet. So you'll be able to have multiple zones. I don't think they specifically mentioned in the update saying that you could specify how many points each zone costs, but I'm guessing for implementing something like Ricochet, that would be an option. You also have different places that you could have the ball spawn. So you have multiple spawn areas, and you can have those be predicted in a certain order as well. So be perfect for oddball.
I think it'd be fun for Griffball too. Random spawn.
No, not from a competitive standpoint. It's
not from a competitive standpoint, just for fun.
Maybe.
Because you get those... I guess it kind of all depends on how the griff ball is matched up. If it's like in Halo 4, where it wasn't rounds, it kind of reset, then I think a random spawn would be good, because it would be harder for the opposing team to predict the spawn. But when you have a round-based one, then, one spawn is plenty.
Griff ball is heavily based off of a sport, though, and I think that the randomness in there isn't going to do well with Griffball, even from a casual standpoint, because that's another randomness aspect that is going to frustrate people. That's just my take on it, though.
We'd have like to ask some
Griffball folks.
I meant for, like a customs game, customs night, something like that. Nothing you'd put in a matchmaking, nothing that would be part of, the Griffball game type settings, things like that. Just, something for a custom game.
Fair enough. So Assault is going to be coming as well as Griffball. And then there's a third game mode that they're adding in here as well. Fiesta!
We can finally have Rochambeau.
Yes, proper Rochambeau without having to have the weird spawn thing at the front, at the beginning. That'll be nice. I'm guessing that's going to be an update to the Slayer game type. That'd be my guess.
Probably. I don't know why they would create a Fiesta play or game type. Just change it to where you can have random weapons. But
yeah, I'm not sure. They say it's a new... Well, they don't say it's specifically a new game mode, because they have two ball-based game modes.
Mm-hmm. The other thing they would need to fix, or at least I hope they fix, if they do a modification to the Slayer game type, is allow the secondary weapon to be set to none.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, I would agree. Anywho, other than the ball update and Fiesta coming to the February update, which we haven't had a name yet, I'm guessing they're going to be doing, they'll probably announce something tomorrow in the community update. They'll probably do the update tease, I'm guessing, because that would leave it 2 weeks for it to come out for the last week in February.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, February's flying by. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, it is.
This whole year's flying by.
Oh, we're only in February.
Well, I know that, but January flew by way too quick. Like, it just seemed like yesterday it was New Year, dude. To me, at least.
Gotcha. So, in addition, they mentioned that there's a lot of forge options for the ball mode as well. So, I'm sure the forgers will be really interested in getting into those, seeing what they can do with it. And they also put in the update the Spartan companies that had achieved the Achilles armor set. And apparently, as of the update, there have been only 6 teams that have gotten it. Whiskey Company, Office of Naval Intelligence, The Sauna, Party Up Gaming, Party Up Gaming Tryhards, and Twitch.
What is that one again?
Party Up Gaming?
No, the commendation.
Oh, it's the level 3 commendations. It's just the armor, not the helmet. Because the helmet's level 5.
No, I meant, what did they have to do to get the commendation?
I think it's everything level 3, right? I believe it's everything level 3. Or maybe it was,
I guess I will just look.
Yeah, if you can look that up real quick.
Let's see. Spartan Company.
While you're doing that, there's been a couple of regional finals to announce winners for. So we had the Australian New Zealand finals happened this past weekend. Uni was actually down in Australia for that one to cover it. And Team Immunity and Exiles were the ones that came out on top. So they are going to be the two teams coming from the Australia-New Zealand region. So congratulations to them. And then we had the European-African regional finals this past weekend as well in Cologne. And that's where a lot of the attention was for this past weekend. And we have the 4 teams chosen from there to come. Epsilon, which we've heard of quite a bit. They were the team that came to the X Games a couple weeks ago. We also have FOB, Excel, and Infused. So congratulations to those teams for making the qualifier there. And then for Asia, which I think the Asian regionals were 3 weeks ago, if I recall. Skyfire from there is coming over for the finals. So we have the Latin America finals happening this weekend, and then the North American finals happening the weekend afterwards. So plenty of Halo to go around. So congratulations to the teams that have already secured their spots in the World Championship finals, and we'll be able to watch some of the Latin America stuff this weekend, and then the Americans the following week. So clear your calendars, because there's a Halo coming.
A lot of it, too.
Mm-hmm. I'll probably watch some of the Latin American like semis and finals. And also, for this weekend, it's an extended weekend for me, because President's Day, I get off on the 15th. So I'm happy.
Freaking government workers. Said it was all together now? Was the commendation they got?
All together now?
Yeah, which commendation did they get again?
Level 3.
No, what was the name of the commendation that they achieved?
It just said level 3 commendations.
Let's see.
I'm guessing it means that they got everything level 3.
Looks like there is a commendation all together now, complete. The first 3 levels of all kill commendations.
Okay. So kill commendations. That is quickly kill 3 or more enemy Spartans. So that's the top hat one, the
You have Grand Theft, the Reaper, Grand Theft, hijack a vehicle, the Reaper, kill an opponent from the grave, from downtown, kill a Spartan long distance.
There's a lot
no
of
hard
them.
Feelings. Yeah, kill a Spartan. Yeah, there is a bunch of them.
21, 23, 25, 27, 29, 31 commendations. Yep. And we probably have a long way to go.
Yeah.
Let's pull ours up real quick. We have 15% of our kill commendations completed. Let's see how many we have at level 3. I see a lot. Working on a lot of level 2s, so we've completed a lot of level 1s.
We've got 1, 2, 3, so 4, 5, 6.
We're currently working on level 3.
That are close to level 3.
We're currently working on level 3, kill an enemy Spartan while kill an enemy Spartan with an aerial vehicle. That one is, it's a bird, so we're currently on level 3 working for that one right now. Everything else is level 2. Everything else is level 2 that we're working on. So, yeah, we have quite a ways to go.
And then we got to get a level 5 stuff if we want that helmet, because that's what I'm really after.
That's definitely going to take a while.
Yeah, that helmet looks sick, though. I'll say that much right now. I mean, I would definitely say it's worth the grind to get it.
Well, for those listening, we have a Spartan company called Podtacular, and if you join, we have our regular Tuesday and Wednesday events for playing in Arena and Warzone, which no one was on Tuesday. What happened with that?
I was not here.
Where are my people at? I got on. I was doing some map testing with Darth Quackers for a little bit, but then I switched off and went over at 9:30 to try to join up, and there was no one on.
I have no idea. Like I said, the last couple of weeks, my internet's been finicky. So if I'm on, it's probably like at 2 or 3 in the morning. Probably just watching Netflix or YouTube at that point, if that.
Okay, we need to hijack 18 more vehicles by the end of the night. Then we'll have Grand Theft at level 3. So after the podcast, everybody go on and hijack a vehicle.
Anyway, so yeah, we have quite a few commendations to work on. Quite a few. We did get a commendation for, I guess, reaching level 2. It was just a simple, small thing. We got 5 different wrecks, and I guess we got something for level 1. I guess that's what it was. That'd be the only thing I could think that coincided with what we got.
I remember level 2. I don't remember getting anything.
Well, we haven't even gotten level 2. We haven't even gotten level 2. We have 30 different ones that haven't even completed level 2 yet. We have one commendation that we've completed level 2.
Maybe it was for completing level 1.
You know, the hardest ones are the killing the AIs, because there's just so much limited amount of those, and you're so focused on killing the enemy team and taking bases that a lot of the time you just pass up those small AI because they don't really aren't worth that much.
Yeah, I don't pass up the AI because every time I pass up the AI, guess what I get killed by?
Yep, I'm in the exact same boat. They destroy me for some stupid reason. I don't know why.
Let's put it this way. The first thing I kill are the Marines when I enter a base because, one, they will come up behind you and kill you. They're extremely effective for Marines. Two, they can see right through a cloak.
So the Marines are one thing, but like the elites or the Prometheans that are protecting the little boss areas, or other than the ones that you first initially kill off from the bases, not many people go after those too much. Those are kind of like cleanups, because you're always focused on capturing the base first and then going and cleaning up if you're in a good position to hold the two bases.
Well, in a base, you have to kill them before you can take the base. Now, the ones around the bosses, yeah, you can focus on the boss, but especially when Warden comes around, you better be taking care of them knights, because they can tear a Banshee up or a vehicle up pretty quick.
True. Pin said in the chat, the Alamo would have never fallen if the AI in Warzone defended it.
It may be the truth, honestly.
Good one, Pins. Good one. Anywho, so yes, commendations. If you're a part of our Spartan company, we have quite a ways to go to get that armor set. So if you're looking at trying to get that armor set, then you need to get to work. And we're actually almost full. We're getting pretty full for our company.
What do we got? 87?
Are we that many? 83. Currently at 83. So we're getting close to full. Getting to the point where we might have to start kicking some inactive people off if we get really full. But please attend our company events. Please. We need people. Please. Anywho, that wraps it up for the update. There's a couple other things. First of all, if you are a collector of any sorts and you like the Square Enix PlayArt Sky, they're taking pre-orders for the Master Chief and Spartan Lock Halo 5 figures. They're both $150 for pre-order, and you can pre-order them from the Square Enix online store. So if that is something that you're interested in, check those out.
They look sick.
They're pretty cool. So I got to see the unpainted ones at New York Comic Con. They didn't have any final details on them, but you could actually see the the model from the 3D print, and they look pretty cool.
Well, we also got to see them at E3 too. It was over by the PlayStation booth, if I remember correctly, over towards all the. Oh, if I'm my brain is it was over by the Twitch booth, if I remember. It was like right across the way. They had them in their display cases that were all gray. Like, they didn't have any full colors on anything on them, but they had them in the like what they were going to look like, which they look pretty sick. Like, seeing them in person and then actually seeing them painted, they look absolutely awesome.
So these are the ones, for anyone who doesn't really collect much Halo stuff, the Square Enix PlayArts Kai are usually the figures that are known for having the detail, having the realistic, being able to position them in realistic poses. They have realistic joints, that kind of stuff. So these are some of the higher end collector's items when it comes to Halo stuff. Granted, there's a few other companies that have also made stuff in the past, but these are the ones that really kind of stand out. Like, if you're an ultimate Halo collector, these are the things that you're getting. So that's out there for anyone interested in collecting that kind of stuff. And that's it for news. There's not really much else that's been going on. We have the Halo World Championship Finals, and we'll probably hear something about the February update tomorrow, I'm thinking. I'd be surprised if we didn't have some kind of tease for the February update tomorrow. Like, having the, you know how they have the rec and the stuff that's coming with the February, the updates, like that image.
Yeah.
And teases a few of the recs. I'm guessing they'll probably have that tomorrow. That'd be my guess.
I hope they bring in some sort of brute shot. I don't know why, but that's like,
that'd be interesting.
That could be fun.
It would. What, something
that recreate like, Troy all over again.
What's that?
Could recreate the game mode Troy all over again.
Yeah, you could. Something that my buddy actually was talking about a couple of days ago, which is actually pretty interesting. It'd be interesting to see if they ever would do it. Is because it has that giant knife on the like on the back on the brute shot, is to make an assassination move for it in some way. I don't think it'll happen because that's a specific weapon that you'd have to use in order to use it. But it'd be pretty sick if they ever came to make something like that.
Well, don't your assassinations change when you have the sword?
And the gravity hammer is supposed to have its own custom ground pound, and I'm assuming assassination, so it would make sense that the brute shot could have its own assassination animation.
It'd be cool. Not lying, dude. I love the brute shot. That, like, I just, not necessarily the gun itself, I just love the way it looked. Like, aesthetically, it looked amazing. And it was really unique compared to everything else that we had, so. Especially, could you have, like, a Whiplash version of it? That'd be...
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sure if they ever came out with something, we would see something, not like exactly like that, but we see something unique like it.
A brute shot with a 10-round clip?
Rapid fire?
Oh.
Yeah, really.
Make that generation bullets. Wreck.
Could you imagine that?
Oh, gosh. That'd make taking out that core really quick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you take out the core and anything that's in the room.
Yeah. You heard here first, 343. Make it happen.
Mm. I actually got my first Whiplash wreck a couple days ago. I was very happy.
Cool.
So I'm interested.
I still have yet to get one.
Yeah.
I've got the one under it.
Which one's that?
I can't remember the name of it. I just used it tonight, but I can't remember what the name of it is.
I want that saw.
Neither can I. Oh, the answer?
That's the saw, the one with the exploded rounds?
Yeah.
Yep.
The answer.
That's the answer.
Yo.
I got six of those. Well, I had six.
I don't know how many of those I have, because I don't think I have the certification for that one yet.
Oh, I got my Oni Warthog certification.
You got that too.
I got do my have certification for hogs, and I haven't had one since.
Yeah. Anywho, but yeah, the answer is the saw with the exploding rounds.
Yeah, I want that thing. That thing
it's wrecks. Really nice.
It destroys.
It's probably, arguably, the most powerful weapon in Warzone.
It's between that and the other one that I would say is the rocket launcher that has the, I guess, missiles, if I'm thinking it right. Like, where you shoot the rocket and it has multiple explosions.
The legendary version of the Spanker?
Yeah, no. It's not the Spanker. It's the other one.
The one that shoots the three rockets?
I think so.
I'm pretty sure the answer is better than that one.
I don't know, dude. I was sitting there taking out. I was taking out a lot of multiple people with one shot rather than just one rocket would. Like it was kind of.
Wait till you get your hands on the answer, and then you'll understand.
Yeah, I probably.
The answer, it is the universal weapon of the entire armory. It will tear through everything. Over shields, Scorpion tanks, Banshees, Ghosts. It doesn't care. People. It just destroys them.
People. Cores.
Oh, it's a standard Spartan.
Toast.
He'll be dead before you let your finger off the trigger.
It's a very versatile weapon. Eric Kippy was saying Norfang, but even still.
Yeah, but Norfang's kind of hard to come by. The answer is a little bit more prominent.
So I'm just looking at it from a, just if you put all the weapons side by side, for versatility and application, I think the answer is probably the best weapon. Because even at range, you're getting hits off of explosions, and you're tossing them around, you're bumping them everywhere. And if you're just unloading on a vehicle, that thing's going to lose health so quickly. I mean, the Norfang is nice on infantry because you get one hit kills no matter what, and it does pretty well on vehicles, but if you want something that's just constantly laying down fire and causing the other person not being able to fire back and take out vehicles so quick, then the answer, I think, is probably your bet.
The answer is your answer. Oh.
Hey-o. I see what
you mean. Yes, there. Definitely in a ranged combat, long-range combat, the Norfang's going to beat the answer hands down just because of its range difference. But you get them in the same amount of range, and one, the answer is a lot easier to use than a Norfang. Not everybody's that good at no scoping with a sniper. Granted, the Norfang is a one hit kill, so all you got to do is touch them. But that answer, oh man, I love using that thing whenever I get a chance to.
It's pretty nice.
I like the three, and we're going on a major tangent. I apologize for this, but I can't remember the name of it. It was the three shot burst pistol with the silencer.
Whispered Truth?
Yeah.
I think is what it's called.
Yeah. Yeah. That thing is amazing. Hands down, as of right now, all the wrecks that I have, that's my favorite wreck. I love that thing to death.
I haven't got to use that one yet.
I've seen some good gameplay of it. I have a couple of them in my bank of wreck cards, but it's one of those that I just haven't gotten to use yet because I think it's a 7.
Yeah, it's a 7.
And there's other 7s that I'd rather use than that at the moment.
Yeah, no, and that's true. It's just I got it. I'm like, I want to try this out and see what it's like. And it didn't. It did damage. I got overkill with it. So I was happy.
All right, cool. Eric Abu said it's 5 for the Whispered Truth, not 7.
Oh, is it 5? I thought it was 7.
For some reason, I thought it was 7 too. I'm not sure.
That's funny. The Whispered Truth's 5 and a DMR is 7 or 6. 7 if you want the silenced one.
Yeah, I'm not sure why the DMR is so high, to be honest. It doesn't make much sense for it to be that high.
Well, I've got an SMG that's a level 8 SMG.
What's on it?
It's the one that's the one-hit melee kill.
Oh.
It's got the bayonet on it.
Gotcha.
I got to use it once.
And then someone else uses it against you?
That's irritating.
No, I used it once and a Marine shot me in the back.
Interesting. Okay, let's move on to some actual content. No, I'm just kidding. We have a couple of campaign missions to cover, so we're going to be covering 3. We have two hub missions that we're going to go through really quick, and then we have a main mission. So we're going to start off with Alliance, which is mission 9, and then do mission 10, enemy lines, and then mission 11, Before the Storm, which is the other hub mission. So we're knocking out 3, although really 1 mission for this podcast, and then we'll wrap it up for the night with another announcement. So going into, so we just got done with finding the Arbiter from the last mission. We got him out of where he was being kind of held up in one of the temples from the remaining of the Covenant. So we got him out. We have an opening cutscene, which I think is one of the few other important cutscenes of the game where Spartan Locke is meeting up with the Arbiter, and there's a little back and forth between him and the Arbiter, and of course, Locke has this kind of customary greeting. He's like, thank you for meeting up with us. Lasky sends his regards. And then the Arbiter has this nice opening that just kind of chills you. He says, Oni out of the shadows. The spies announced themselves. So Arbiter obviously knows that Spartan Locke was ordered at one point to execute him. And Locke has his rebuttal. Well, that was before, but I'm a Spartan now. So everything is better. And Arbiter's like, yeah, I'm not falling for that.
You still got Oni strapped to your chest, dude. You ain't fooling me.
Yep. It's it was a nice dialogue back and forth. I think that's one of the better cutscenes of the game was this whole interaction. So they get to talking back and forth about why he's really there, that they're searching for the Master Chief. And then they get interrupted by none other than Cortana, who apparently has already connected with all the systems on St. Helios and basically threatens them, saying that let Spartan Locke hunt because they're never going to find where they are. So she's obviously kind of putting them in their place. And then Halsey comes in and saying kind of the obvious, that Halsey's already been through all the network systems and has already figured out where the Guardian is. So there's not much time for them to try to figure out how to get this Guardian active. So Locke approaches the Arbiter and says that he has the firepower to get them into Sunion, which is the place where the Guardian is on St. Helios. And it just so happens that Sunion is the last city on St. Helios that is controlled by the Covenant, or at least the remains of the Covenant. So he retorts saying that they're only going to take Sunion whenever they're assured victory. So that gives them time to plan. And leading into this mission, when you actually start walking around in this hub area, that's when you kind of learn that Halsey has come up with this idea that there's constructor bots in the area that kind of help support the Forerunner installation, or not Forerunner installation, but the Forerunner buildings that are there on St. Helios, including the Guardian. So it's her plan to actually find one of these constructors and then use that constructor to activate the Guardian under their control instead of having Cortana activate it. So they get you get to this hub area and take time to walk around, because there's lots of cool little interactions that you can do here. You get to learn a little bit about the dynamic that has developed between the Ungoy and the Sangheili, which is pretty cool. There's one part where there's a grunt and an elite just looking out on the cliffside, and the grunt is doing all the talking. And I played it again today just to kind of have a refresher. And I sat there for probably about 15 minutes before I heard dialogue get repeated. So there's quite a bit of stuff in here to fill time.
Oh, there is a bunch of dialogue in there.
Another thing, too, with kind of walking around, if you go off to the right side, just as you exit from where you first start the mission, you'll see kind of like this nursing area, and you'll see elites kind of heal each other. And it's kind of a shift from how we've seen elite culture in the past, because it's been one thing where, like, to be injured is to be shamed and kind of rid of honor. But you see kind of a shift in, and we talked a little bit about shift in kind of the politics in the last episode with the previous mission. And now we're seeing kind of a shift of mentality of what honor means and what injury means compared to like fighting and battle and whatnot. So if you go over there, you actually hear some interesting dialogue about what it means to be injured, like fighting with, there's one part in there was like, fighting with a weakened sword to not just like completely kill somebody, but to injure past the point of not being able to fight. So it's there. And if you've played Halo in the past, which I'm assuming you have, there's been a lot of kind of like honor in fighting that the elites have held. So, and you see that start to lax a little bit and change a little bit, which is kind of cool. There's lots of interesting things behind the scenes in the universe when it comes to stuff kind of changing in the background with Halo 5 that I don't think a lot of people see. And if you really take the time to kind of step back and see the overall changes that's happening in the Halo universe, there's actually a lot of stuff in the Halo 5 campaign.
Yeah, the one big thing that I've noticed about the Halo 5 campaign is that the AI is a lot more chatty.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that in they have a wider variety of what they talk about. Some of it just total nonsense that adds nothing to the Halo universe other than it's funny to listen to, like the Grunt and the Elite for some of the conversation. But they've added so much more little tidbits of story in there that if you followed the Halo universe, you can relate to and you know what it pertains to and where it stems from. And I really like that about the campaign.
I think to that point, though, it does develop more on the universe overall. Just look at the books, see all the stuff that we get to learn about through that. And to see some of the dynamics change, especially we talked about the last episode, the political structure of the Sangheili is starting to change a little bit. And if you look at a few cases in here in this hub mission, you start to see some of the traditions of the Sangheili be changed a little bit. And there's other places in here where you see there's one couple of elites that were talking about how the Arbiter and the other elite that we killed in the first mission. Why am I blanking on his name?
Jewel.
Yeah, Jewel. How they like one of them was arguing how they rule by fear, and the other one was like saying you shouldn't be talking like that. Just follow orders. So there's kind of the struggle of like realizing what the society really needs to be like for Sangheili, because they've operated under this kind of dictatorship of following one person and following them to the death. But you start to see Sangheili start to question that, and that kind of changed because the Arbiter's viewpoint on that has kind of changed as well. A lot of the stuff that's been going on politically and kind of in the way they've been fighting, even since, I guess, since the events of like Halo 3, has started to change a little bit. And it's going to be interesting to see how that changes over the course of the next few games as well.
Definitely. It's a interesting change to the story.
So I think, because that makes for a really interesting universe, I think, to actually see these changes happening. We got to see a lot of the insurrectionists, but we know a lot about that from human history. So it's interesting to see the application on an alien species in the Halo universe.
Well, they're starting to develop those species more now than they have in the past. Don't get me wrong. We've picked up a lot from the books and stuff, but they're bringing more of that development into the game to showcase it more in a, you know, maybe a wider audience than the books get. But I honestly can't tell you because I don't know how many copies of each book gets sold. There's a lot of people that just read the fiction. I know people that they like the Halo story, but they wouldn't know which end of the controller to grab, but they still like what is put out in the, you know, in the book media, the little short films. They'll watch the Halo, the TV commercials for little hints to the story, stuff like that.
The TV spots.
Yeah. The nice thing with the original game is that they did convert it into a book. The Halo 2 campaign is kind of covered through a couple of books, not in great detail, but it's, you get a lot of the high points, the Halo 2, Halo 3, you know, timeline. So, I mean, they're not missing out a whole lot. They're missing a lot of detail, but I like how talkative the AI is in Halo 5. Don't get me wrong, the conversations that were had in the other Halo games were fun, at least where the Covenant was actually talking and not just Grunt or Ort. I like to be able to listen in on those conversations because they give you little bits of, just little bits of information of how the world's changed or how this universe is changing.
Yep. And I personally think it's a really nice touch. And a lot of people out there, including myself, think the campaign was kind of weak compared to some of the other campaigns. Definitely from the marketing perspective, it wasn't even related to how it was marketed at all.
Yeah, the story that was the main story that is in the in Halo 5 is very weak. It's still a very good story. It's just not as long or in depth as the previous games.
Yes. And I think these other side things help make up for that in a way that it contributes to the overall universe. Maybe not for the game story specifically, but the overall universe. It adds a little more character to it, a little more vibrance to whatever else is going on within the books and other stuff that's supporting the Halo storyline. So what they lacked in the main story, I think they kind of helped make up with the side chatter between your fire team and then some of the in-game chatter like you get here with the hub stuff between the elites and the grunts. So I like that aspect of it. There's also another part where you have a grunt singing. There's a part where you have some elites that are trying to repair a banshee and you can interact with them. And Locke makes a suggestion of what could be wrong. And then the elites are like, that's not it. Just go away. Leave us alone type of thing. But to kind of get on the main point of why you're at this hub spot, Halsey has come up with the plan to get a constructor to activate the Guardian. So she tells you the plan and then you head over to Halsey and... Sorry, Palmer. And Halsey's already given Palmer coordinates to find a constructor, and then you leave. Before you do that, though, there are 8 pieces of intel that you can grab on this hub area. So there's one immediately behind you as you spawn. There is one up top just kind of after you spawn. So if you go behind to grab the first one, you can head on to a tunnel over on the left side, and you'll hear the singing grunt. And if you jump past the singing grunt to kind of a structure that's elevated, you'll find your second one there. There's a cave system off to the right. Just come after you come out of the spawn area, there's a third one in there. And there's another one over by the medical area. There's a fourth one there. After you go talk to Halsey, if you turn right around back in that little area, there's another piece of intel there. There's a piece of intel on top of an archway. So as you're heading over to Palmer, about halfway between Halsey and Palmer, there's a archway that's up there. You got to clamber up 3 or 4 different things, structures, to get up there. So definitely use your Artemis ping to figure out where that is. After you find that one, hold to the right. You'll see a pair of elites talking. You'll find your seventh one there. And then the 8th one is over by some crates right before you hop on the Pelican to go find the constructor. So there's 8 of them in there. And you can find them all there. And apparently, according to Erkibu, the dialogue changes depending on who interacts with the elites. And apparently, Tanaka actually tells them how to fix it. I have to actually try that. Going to co-op with somebody.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
I didn't either. Apparently, we haven't explored Halo in its fullest. We got to do some co-op.
Well, I mean, the game was built to be played co-op. When yes. They designed the campaign, that's the way they designed it.
Apparently, the elites have the hots for Tanaka for... It's not going to be able to tell them how to fix it and then to listen. Interesting.
Must be into short humans.
Well, there is that one elite. We haven't really talked about what is in the intel yet, but we'll talk about that when we actually get through the campaign. But there is one piece of intel where an elite writes some poetry for Palmer.
That's interesting.
Careful, he's going to make Lasky jealous.
I've told you this one, Bio.
I don't remember.
Yes, I know. I was there because we... made the whole comment about Brent having the hots for Palmer.
Oh, yeah, that's right. All right, I remember now. I gotcha. I didn't remember. I don't remember what he says. I remember he did something like that. I remember the conversation now, though.
Yeah, it's an interesting piece of intel, to say the least. So, yeah, that's the hub mission. Definitely go around, check this. I think this, out of all the hub missions, this one is probably the most entertaining to hear from just the fire team chatter, the AI chatter, and overall you get just an interesting perspective that adds little just nuggets to the universe, but they're still pretty cool nuggets that help you understand a little bit of how the universe is changing in the Halo 5 timeline compared to how we've traditionally seen Halo in the past. And I think that's pretty cool. I find that fascinating, personally. So, on the mission 10, enemy lines. Everyone should be familiar with this one. This is the one that they kept on showing over and over and over again.
And over and over and over, yes.
On, like, preview streams before the game even came out. This was one of two missions that they showed over and over and over again. So you start out landing from your Pelican. You're passing to the Arbiter's net battle net, and you're fighting your way through Covenant that have basically encamped themselves. And I'm sure they only made the vehicle name the Kraken just so they can have the Arbiter say the line. Target the Kraken or something?
Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something like that. I felt they could have used the Kraken in so many different ways than what they did, to be perfectly honest, before we get into what actually happens. But
I heard Kraken, the first thing that popped in my head was Clash of the Titans.
I thought of Unleash the Kraken. That's what I thought of. Anywho.
Yeah, I want to know where the other, what was it, be five arms for that Kraken are?
It only had, what, three?
Three, yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah, I think it was Attack the Kraken or something like that. Anywho, you are patched into the BattleNet, and they're going to be providing air support as you're fighting your way through a bunch of Covenant that have already kind of embedded themselves in this this fire zone. First few pieces of intel are going to be in this area. So just as you start, there's a river that kind of cuts in perpendicular to where you're going. If you actually follow it off to the left at the very bottom, you'll find your first piece of intel there as one of the antiquated swords, one of the old elite swords. So you find one there. There's another piece of intel right before you encounter your first group of Covenant, which is the two grunts. If you head over to the left, there's a couple of plasma grenades there. You can pick up your second piece of intel there. And then the third piece of intel is just after you kill off the second group of enemies, the one that has the elite, and it's up on a little ledge with a carbine if you take the right side after that encounter. So your third piece of intel is up there. And then your fourth piece of intel is going to be in a little room off to the right before the shield door. So that's your first four pieces of intel. Pretty easy to get. Strategies for clearing through this area is pretty simple. I mean, take out the grunts with headshot weapons. So you start with a BR Magnum. So that makes pretty easy work. If you're on Legendary, I would pick up a plasma pistol before you get too far into the area after the Kraken first comes out, because you have a couple of elites. You have one like elite general, I think, coming down with the couple of grunts. So using the plasma pistol on the general will be useful for taking him out. And then you have two or three elites guarding the shield door. So you want to take them out with hopefully a plasma pistol as well. Badam Burial Mounts is what it's called. Thank you, Erikibu. So go through, clean up grunts, clean up jackals. You have a few elites. Pretty easy work, even on Legendary, to get through this area. There's also a couple places where you can pick up some power weapons. There's a fuel rod, there's a beam rifle, and there's a few needlers that some of them will drop if you're a needler fan like I am. And yeah, make sure you just don't get taken out from the Kraken either, because they do have the fuel rod shade turrets, and those will do some damage. Although they don't really target you too much in this first area. It's really kind of the subsequent areas that they really target you. But it's still something that you want to be mindful of, that you don't want to be too far out near the cliff edge, or else they will start actually taking shots at you. Anyone else got anything else to comment, or can I move on?
No, you pretty much covered it.
I don't have anything to add.
All right. So in the next section, you are met with some ghosts that you can use for this next area. The Kraken moves on. This is basically kind of like a little transition area for you to kind of take a break in the fight and then go on straight to fighting more enemies. So you pick up a ghost. If you hang towards the left, you'll find another piece of intel. And then you have, right after this area, lots of suicide grunts. So be very careful as you're going through this area, because you will get messed up so bad from suicide grunts. And if you're playing solo, the AIs will get decimated. Your fire team will get decimated, because they'll just ram the grunts and their suicide grunts so they blow up. Have you guys had that happen to you? Because whenever I was running Legendary, it's just a comedy of errors. They just boost right into them and they blow up.
I haven't done my Legendary run yet, so nah.
It's pretty bad.
Sounds bad.
I've routinely had one of them die, at least, on Legendary. Because I'll try to shoot them all, before their grenades explode, but someone will somehow just decide to ram one of them and then they blow up. So be careful of the suicide grunts. They will give you a bad day, to say the least. So that's the first wave after you pick up your ghost. That's the first big wave, is all the suicide grunts. You can take a couple different paths. You can either go under the bridge, like overlooking thing, or you can go into the cave on the left. Either way works. I would do the cave on the left because it gives you a little more cover and it kind of helps you divide up the enemies from the next area. And then you have another set of enemies, and these, I think a few of them will go suicide for the grunts, but not many of them. You can take them out pretty easily, I think, in the second part compared to the first part. And once you do...
Oh, and there are a couple of enemy ghosts as well.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there's a couple of them there, so just be very careful of trying to take them out. If you are running co-op, then if you have someone with a plasma pistol still from your last area, zap them, board them, take out the drivers, and use them, or just zap them and just put bullets into them. That's really the best way to take them out. Cat's ghost runs and Cat's ghost returns. Yeah.
Oh, no.
In this case, it's your whole fire team. Could be any one of them. I think I've seen Buck do it. I've seen Tanaka do it. It's...
Well, I lost my entire fire team.
I don't think I've been in a situation where I've lost my whole fire team, but I've lost two of them before.
Yeah, some of them do pull cat moves. I still don't trust them to drive.
You shouldn't trust any AI ever to drive.
But they, overall, I find the AI helpful as long as you direct them correctly. If you let them just wander on their own, they're pretty useless. But if you give them some direction, and I think we've said this before, but don't actually have them focus on any one enemy. Just put them in a general area and just let them go and just keep an eye on them. That technique, especially on Legendary, works a lot better.
It's not a bad idea.
Because if you get them all focusing on one enemy, they ignore the rest and then they die. Or they'll run up right up to them and get, you know, you target an elite, they'll run right up to him and then he'll just punch him.
Do the whole elite roundhouse kick.
Three dead AI. It's just, like I said, a good tip is just point him in the general direction. Don't have him attack any one particular enemy.
Works for me. So after this area, there's another piece of intel that you want to turn around and get. Just before you enter the cave system, or kind of the building area where the two shield doors are, you turn around, there's kind of a rock pillar standing there. You want to sprint, jump, clamber up on top of that, and you'll find another piece of intel there. And that's just before the kind of the Kraken moves on as well. And I think here the Kraken will shoot you, will take more shots at you here than it did in the previous area. So be a little more careful about going through this area and where the Kraken is than you did in the last area. Once you get through, there is a kind of a short little intermission in fighting, and you'll actually have a chance to see some Spartan chatter going on, some fire team chatter. And you'll get to a room where you need to use the Artemis to figure out where the switch is. I think it's far past spoilers.
Well, don't spoil it for them.
Oh, okay. All right. So use the,
let them find it.
Use the Artemis to figure out where the switch is, even though the game's been out for more than 3 months. But use the Artemis to figure out where the switch is. Once you find the switch, you'll open up the next area. And you all have... Actually, is it... No, that's... Did I jump ahead? Yeah, I jumped ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah.
Oops, my bad. So before that, there's a big open cavernous area because there's the Wraith here. You have a big open area, then there's a bridge that's been dissolving or kind of been destroyed over time. And this is this big open area. So there's, when you first get in there, there's an elite talking to two grunts. You can assassinate the elite and take out the two grunts. And there's just a lot of fire coming from everywhere. This is probably the most hectic part of this mission. And there is a Wraith at the very end of the bridge, right before a shield door. There's Jackal snipers. There's elite generals and elite majors and ultras and lots of firepower coming in from every single direction that you can think of. There's a couple different tactics that you can use. I personally go over to the right. So I'll take the little path down by the bridge to try to get behind and get under the shield door, because there's a place where you can Spartan charge through a cracked wall and get under the shield door and get out quickly. So I try to get past the shade turret that's on that right side really quickly and then go around and get through this area as quickly as possible. But there are, I mean, what are the guys, what, yeah, wow, can't speak. What tactics do you guys use? Because I know for the snipers on the left, I try to avoid those. And that's one of the reasons why I go on the right.
It kind of depends on what I'm doing. If I'm going through showing somebody where the intel is, I'll generally clear the area. Or I'll go off to the right and grab one of the ghosts to clear the area.
Okay.
Honestly, I just sit back and take everything out from the distance. I don't know. I'm weird when it comes to that. Like, I've been on the ghost so many times and blew up compared to like just sitting back and taking everything out is more of a better tactic that works for me compared to what other people I know use. They go in there and spray and pray and die instantly, it seems.
Well, interesting that you mentioned that, because even though you're not supposed to be able to get ghosts into this area, you can.
Yeah.
There are two ghosts in the area.
That too. But I'm thinking from like the last area, there is a way to get the ghost from
the
last
area. Yeah, you can.
It's tricky, but you can do it.
Yeah, usually by the time I get that ghost up there, it's on its last thruster.
Hey, as long as you get it up there, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've done that trick, and I've used it to take care of just the very first group of enemies that spawn right in there by the tunnel or the first part of the bridge. Mm-hmm. But then I'll go get the other ghosts.
The fresh ones.
The brand new ghosts that, that don't have bullet holes in them.
Good.
I found that if you can kind of hide in that cave where those ghosts are, and the elite general at the end of the bridge will come over to the edge. And occasionally, it's kind of a random thing. He will stand in a spot where he'll just stand there and let you shoot him.
Nice. Yay for buggy AI scripting.
Yeah. It's more prevalent on heroic than it is on legendary for him to do that.
Okay.
Legendary, he's a pretty tough target to hit, but occasionally he'll hit that one spot and he'll just kind of stand there and let you shoot him.
Nice. That's really fortunate. Whenever you're on legendary and you get a free shot at AIs, that's always nice.
Yeah.
If you're going for intel on this, the first place that you want to go is off to the right. So there's a piece of intel on kind of a little cliff outcropping area. Hop on top of that. You'll find your first piece of intel. Next piece of intel in this area is you kind of have to go on the bridge. So you will have to fight through some enemies, including the jackal snipers on the left. And they're pretty easy to take out. If you're on legendary, you'll have maybe one free shot before they decide to just utterly destroy you. So find them quickly. There's one or two over on the far left. There's a building that's over there that you take them out, and then there's one, I think, on the bridge right in front of you. So I think there's
no far right side.
Is there another one on the far right side as well?
Yeah, there's not one on the bridge next to the Wraith. It's off to the right in that little building where the fuel rod is.
There really? There's one back there?
Yeah.
I've never gotten shot by that one then.
Yeah, he's killed me twice.
Oh. I guess I've been lucky.
Yeah.
Yay me. I know the two on the left, but I've just never...
Yeah, the two on the left are pretty... They've caused me more trouble than the other one.
Okay.
But the one on the far right, you need to keep your eye out for him.
Gotcha.
I think maybe he spawns under the bridge or something, and then after so many enemies are killed, he moves up.
Maybe that's why, because whenever I run through here, I just try to go as quickly as possible without killing too many enemies. Maybe that's why. But as you get to the middle part where there's actually a big gap between the bridge in the middle and the bridge to continue on, that you really can't make the jump, you want to look over to your right, and there's a beam rifle sitting next to a piece of intel that you can boost over to. But you will want to take out enemy forces first, because you will get pot shots at you and you will die pretty easily on the higher difficulties. So clear out some enemies first, especially the jackal snipers, and then go pick up the piece of intel. And then the other piece of intel in this area is you actually need to go through the bottom Spartan chargeable wall. And once you get through that, it's immediately to your left on the little shelf, and there's a kneeler right by it. And that's your other piece of intel in this area. Pretty easy to get. Several power weapons in here as well. If you pick up the sniper, the beam rifles from the Jekyll snipers. There's also beam rifles kind of littered all over the place. There's a fuel rod in a building off to the right before you go through the shield door and all that kind of stuff. I think I've only destroyed the shield door once because I've always gone through the bottom. So it gets you totally out of the way of having to worry about the Wraith at all. So if you can get under there and then take out the enemies in the buildings, or if you, another tactic I've done is I've gone up on the right, and then once I get to the middle bridge, I'll switch over and then come on the left. So I just avoid that right side building altogether. And then you only have to worry about the elite two jackals in the grunt. I think that's right underneath the Wraith. And then you just Spartan charge through the wall or melee it down, and then you head on, make your way. Makes it pretty easy that way. If you go through the route of destroying the shield door and going through the top part, you will need to address the Wraith first. It's as simple as that.
Which there's several grunts there with plasma pistols that make taking care of the Wraith relatively easy. Just take care of the guards at range with either carbines or sniper rifles. There's plenty of ammo there. And then just plasma pistol the Wraith and stick a grenade in it.
Zap them to death.
Mm-hmm.
That works. So this is the area that I was mentioning before where you need to use your Artemis to find out where the switch is for the door. And then once you do that, since GT does not want me to spoil it for you, you go through, you'll see a couple of Promethean soldiers doing their warp thing. You can actually kill them. It is possible if you have some kind of longer range weapon, if you have like a BR or carbine, or I've even used a needler, you can take them out before they reach the end platform of the next area that you're supposed to go to. So if you're able to do that, it's not required, but you can do that if you want. But as you walk out, there's this next big cavernous area. There's Phaetons that spawn. You hop in the Phaeton, and the Kraken is back. Yay.
Yay.
Yay, Kraken.
Unleash the Kraken.
And we finally get to the point where you can come up with the achievements for the level.
Yes. So this achievement on this map is called Kraken Lacken. And it's a little difficult to pull off, especially on the higher difficulties, but you have to land on the Kraken without destroying any of the turrets on it. So it's kind of a challenge, especially on the higher difficulty. You don't have to do it on a higher difficulty. You can do this on easy if you want. But even on legendary, there is a way to do this that is not too difficult. So for me, my strategy on legendary is you fly around to the opposite side of the Kraken. So on the side where you actually would be going into the final area of this mission, the Forerunner door, and then you can park your Phaeton in this window area. So you can pop out, the Phaeton won't survive, but you can hop out of your Phaeton without having to take really too much damage from, or too much fire from one of the turrets. Then you hop out, you make your way down. It's right by a Banshee hangar, and there's also right by there, you could go to one of the other places. You can either go down right into the core room, and you'll be taking fire from elites and grunts that come down there, or there's another little window that actually overlooks the core that's not in the core room itself. So if you take out the shield of that window, you can actually just shoot at it all day long, and the enemy AI won't come to you there nearly as much. So that's my two strategies there. And then once you blow up the core of the Kraken, you just hop a Banshee and leave. That's the easiest way that I've figured out how to do it. Also in the Kraken, before you take it out, though, in that Banshee hangar, the one that's on the side of the Promethean doorway, there is the skull that you need to pick up. So you take your Banshee, and if you're looking at the hangar door, go to the left. There is kind of a shelf face that you can't normally jump up to. You'd have to fly up there with the Banshee. And if you get up there, go ahead, hop out, and you'll find your skull.
And if I remember correctly, it's the only green hallway in the inside the Kraken. The green lit hallway, I should say.
Could be.
I think all the rest of them are like a blue color or purple color as far as the lights themselves.
Well, because the greenlit hallways, those are the two that go down to the core room itself, right? I think that's why. Because I think it's the pair of hallways, and they just, if you're coming up from the core room, it splits off, one to the right, one to the left, and they both go to Banshee hangers. So that would make sense, I guess. but it's on the opposite side of the green hall that has the window that you can look down into the core room. So that's a little bit safe if you want to do it that way. Anywho, so yeah.
And then after you after you destroy your core, if you're still playing on co-op, have one of your co-op partners fly over with a
Phaeton.
Phaeton, jump on top of the Phaeton and have them fly you off of the Kraken before it explodes.
So I have not done that achievement
yet.
And you'll get
your other achievement.
I need to do that with somebody. Finally, in this area, there is one last piece of intel, and you'll see a little foreigner pedestal standing out to the right side after you first come out, or to the left side if you're coming out of the door from the Forerunner construct, and that is your last piece of intel for the mission. So go ahead and collect that. It's pretty easy to get. And then we move on to the final piece. So after you take down the Kraken, there's a little circular doorway. You go ahead, head on in there. You'll go to the very back, where you'll find a hologram of the local region and the Guardian that's there as well. And they don't really touch on this that much. And I'm actually, when I played through it today, I'm actually kind of curious now about what was actually going on. But they depicted the Guardian connected to some kind of sphere. And I'm wondering what that sphere is. I'm wondering if Erikibu, if you're still in here, if you know what that sphere is.
That's his charging base.
You think so?
I don't know. It could be one of 100 things.
Because they comment, the Osiris comments about it, but they don't go into detail. Because they go straight to mission objective. It's like, let's get this constructor. And they had the brilliant idea, well, if a constructor is supposed to fix stuff, then let's just break something. So they break the pedestal, and then the little constructor pops up. No, Eric, we were talking about...
And then all hell breaks loose.
We're talking about the sphere and the hologram of the Guardian. It has some kind of like red pipe going to the Guardian, and it looks like it's connected to a sphere. So they made a comment about like what it's depicting and what it's connected to, and then they just cut to the chase where they're just trying to figure out how to get the constructor. So I didn't know if you knew in your extended lore knowledge if they actually explained that somewhere later on. But anyways, moving right along, after you get the constructor, you have a lot of Prometheans that you have to fight. I think it's a total of 2 knights, 3 or 4 soldiers with turrets.
Soldier captains.
That's what they are. Thank you. Soldier captains. And then you have 4 or so watchers. And then you have, I think, maybe 8 regular soldiers. And 2 to 4 crawlers? Something like that? Does that sound right?
That sounds about right.
Okay.
But they do give you plenty of ammunition in the room.
Yes.
There's scatter shots. There's a couple of incineration cannons, along with, I think one of the knights spawns with an incineration cannon. The other one spawns with a scatter shot.
Yeah.
So
the first one spawns with the scatter shot. The second one spawns with the incin cannon.
And then you also have the splinter turrets that the soldier captains bring in, which if you can grab one of those, they just destroy everything.
They make handiwork of both soldiers and knights.
Yeah, with that splinter turret, you don't have to hit the weak spot. You just kind of have to get close to them.
Gotcha.
Even on Legendary, that splinter turret it tears through soldiers. I think it was 2 shots.
It's
shots on
powerful.
A regular, 2-3 shots on the soldier captains, and I think 5 shots on the knights to kill. That's if you hit every shot.
And then with the knights, though, if you actually hit them in the sensitive areas, you can take them out even quicker. Because if you nail a shot or two, I think, into like the vents under, I guess, would be his arms, and he does the little war thing where he opens his face and he just headshot him in the face, takes him out pretty quickly that way too. Splinter grenades are also very handy here. They will take, yes. They will take, at least for the soldiers, they'll take them out to where they've lost their face and you can headshot them. And then for the knights, because they're so bulky and they move through stuff, you just get close by and they're just walking through it. So the splinter grenades do a significant amount of damage to the knights as well. Anywho, after you clean up all the Prometheans, after you clear them all out, the Arbiter comes and picks you up, And that's done for this mission. Nothing too heavy story-wise other than getting the Constructor and having the Kraken in there, which is a new vehicle now in Halo. Well, depending on how long it takes, I'm sure we'll see a Mega Bloks build of it at some point.
Okay, if the Scarab was... Let's see, how tall was the Scarab? 18 inches?
18 inches, something like that, yeah.
Okay, how tall is this Kraken going to be? 4 feet?
No, they probably scale it down a little more than they did for the Scarab.
Well, it still have to be bigger than the Scarab. You wouldn't want the Kraken to be smaller than your Scarab.
No, I would think, though, proportionally, 4 feet might be about right. That'd be one insane set to build.
I would do it.
No kidding.
I'd gladly do it.
That would take multiple days. I haven't even done the Infinity or the Scarab yet. I have both of those that I need to do.
I think the first thing you need to do is once you need to find a place for them to live.
That too. That's very important.
Before you put them together, I think you need to find a place for them to live.
I already have a hard time finding the current ones I have built a place to live.
Or I should say you should make a place for them to live, then put them together.
That too. That too. Moving on to the last hub mission that we have for the game, and the hub mission right after this, mission number 11, before the storm. So we've collected the Constructor. He's followed us home. We're back to the same little hub area that we were right before this. And right off the bat, we'll just go ahead and cover the intel. There's 5 pieces of intel. Most of them are in the same or similar locations as they were before. There's only 5 of them, though. And use your Artemis to ping them. There's one up on top of the little structure area that you had to climb up on for the first one. There's one right behind you when you spawn. That's another one. There's one up by where the sinking grunt was the first time you came here. There's one over by the medical area, although you have to jump on top of the tents and then get on top of a rock shelf to get there. And then there's another one underneath one of those tents. So there's only 5 of them. They're pretty easy to find. What you're doing in this hub mission, and there's not as much interactive dialogue in this hub as there was in the last one. There is a couple of things that you can pick up. If you go over to the medical area, they're talking about the whole like honor and who should they mend to first if multiple people have fallen in battle, that kind of stuff. But mostly for this one, you're in and out for this one. There's not much additional stuff that you can do this time going through the hub. So you go meet with Palmer first, and you'll report in saying that you found the Constructor, and you'll overhear Palmer talking to the Arbiter, saying that they're ready to attack Sunion even if the Constructor is not ready, and that they'll provide air support while you with Fireteam Osiris are going to be fighting on the ground, along with a few other Swords of St. Helios. Folks as well. So you go talk to Palmer, and then you go talk to Halsey, who says that they have the Constructor. She's programming the Constructor with the readings that they got from Meridian, and almost instantly the Constructor goes off on his way and goes towards the Guardian, and then you're off. And that's mission 11. Pretty short.
Thankfully, no. I still, don't get me wrong, the hub missions do give you a lot of information, but I don't think they had enough.
To be honest with you, I don't think they really needed them. Like, I didn't feel that the campaign needed those. Like, if they needed something, it could have been like a shortcut or something, or not a shortcut, but a cutscene or something. I don't know. I just felt that it was kind of a waste of time, in my opinion.
I mean, the last hub mission, with that one I can kind of be okay with because there's a lot of other things that you can go do during the mission. You'll like go listen to the singing grunt, go listen to the talk, the elite and the grunt talk. There's things to do in there. But the other two hub missions, I mean, yes, you can pick up some dialogue. The first one's mostly hostility towards UNSC, which, considering the planet you're on, not surprising.
Well, yeah.
You get the soccer ball to play with. Okay, but a lot of that could have been done in just a simple cutscene, and we could have got 2 more missions out of the game.
Yeah.
But it just seems like a little waste to me, but hopefully for Halo 6, we won't have that problem.
There's just a lot more that they could have done with the hubs. there could have been a lot more interaction. There could have been more, not to say necessarily more story, because I mean the Halo 5 story was kind of a little lackluster to begin with, but there could have been a lot of things that they could have capitalized on for these hub missions.
Well, I mean, if
yeah, you there want, could be, but it, go ahead, Bio.
I was just going to say something they could have done that would have been really interesting was kind of do what they did with like cell phone stuff, or not the cell phone, but the payphone things that did in ODST. Like if they wanted to sit there and give a little bit more information of a little bit more dialogue or something like that, they could have done maybe some sort of area.
That was the intel
that you. Well, right. But what I'm going off of is like maybe you could check your stats on, you know, what you've done in the campaign so far or certain thing, like to make it a little bit more of a unique experience than what they already, you know, what they gave right there. I mean,
well, the phones in ODST is where they wanted to tell a second story.
Well, right.
I understand. That was the whole design behind that, is they wanted to tell Sadie's story through those audio logs.
Well, right. But that's what I'm saying.
Now. To expand on what you feel for the city as it's being attacked, which that's all well and good, because that kind of falls right into that data pad audio or terminal type deal. These hub missions, yeah, there's a lot more they could do with them, but it just doesn't feel like it belongs in a Halo campaign.
It's almost like they tried to make a cutscene a mission.
Yeah, an interactive cutscene.
Yeah, but I mean, something they could have done that a lot of people I think would have agreed with, I mean, I know that we all would, is expand upon the Hunt the True story a little bit. Like, maybe have those, like, terminal type things give us a little bit more intel of what's going on with Pharaoh. Like, just everything that was going on with Hunt the Truth. Hunt the Truth, they did very well with. Story-wise, plot-wise, and stuff like that, they did an excellent job with. Personally, I found Hunt the Truth was more entertaining than some of the stuff that I was seeing in Halo 5, to be perfectly honest. I mean, if they wanted to sit, they could have sit there and brought that in there in some way, because I know a lot of people that really enjoyed that podcast. Like,
yeah,
they went all out on that, and that's something that I think they should have continued off of, to be perfectly honest.
It was a really good story. They did very well with it, but it, from what we understand, it's not something they wanted to continue at this time. And the logs in Halo 5 do tell good stories. Unfortunately, to really get a grasp on the stories that are in there, you need to find all of them.
Yeah, you have to listen to them all pretty much sequentially.
Yeah, you have to listen to them all, and you need to listen to them in the correct order. Because some of them kind of skip around, and you'll be hearing two different conversations. So you need to put the right audio logs together and listen to them sequentially to really get the whole story that they're telling in these logs.
True.
Which is fine. I don't mind hunting for the intel. That, you know, that's like hunting for the terminals in Halo 3 or Halo 4.
Hunting for the truth.
But the mission idea itself, it just doesn't seem to fit Halo. Granted, I could be biased in that because none of the other games had it, but it just kind of seems a waste of time. It breaks the gameplay. It breaks the immersion a little bit, for at least for me. You know, because when I'm in there running a mission, I really start thinking that I'm the guy in the green suit and I'm actively doing something. Running around talking to AI just doesn't seem to fit.
Yeah. Well, something they could have done, and I don't remember how they incorporated this, but they could have done something with that. Remember when the people that got first player, when they got the whole code thing for Hunt the Truth, we had to go on your cell phone, do all that stuff. They could have incorporated some sort of Easter egg within each person that won on that team. Like, what was it, four for each team, if I remember correctly?
Yes, and they were part of a cutscene.
Which cutscene was that?
It's The one in the Infinity Bay, there's another fire team supposedly, and that's supposed to be them.
Oh, okay. Well, even, like, still, I mean, like, they could have done something, like, I don't know. They could have done something a little bit more creative. Creativity is something that 343 can pick up on a little bit more. Something that makes the experience a little bit more unique. Bungie did it very well with Easter eggs and, you know, well,
they're,
interactive
they're things. Plenty creative. They just need to show it.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, they need to show it within the game.
Well, Halo 6, hopefully.
Fingers crossed. Yes. But I have to admit, all in all, Halo 5 is a fun game to play. Even with its quirks, even with its problems, it is fun. It's so much better than the Master Chief Collection, which I know are all games that we've all played and we all love in one way or another. I mean, you know, there may not be our favorite game, but we all enjoy at least an aspect of one of the games, of each of the games. But just the mechanics of Halo 5, the way it plays, the multiplayer, the single player, I enjoy it. And it's nice to enjoy Halo again.
Yay. I will say this is probably the most fun I've had in the Halo games since Halo 2.
I could see that. I could definitely see that with me because during Halo 3, a lot of the people that I started playing with in Halo CE and Halo 2 had kind of started falling off. By Halo Reach, I maybe played with them once or twice a month. By Halo 4, they were all but non-existent.
And Halo 5's trying to bring them back into the fold.
Well, unfortunately, they've moved on to other things. One of them, he is thinking about getting Halo 5. He's starting to get back into Halo. The other one has never been a FPS kind of shooter guy for consoles. PCs, yes. Consoles, no. And my other friend has just, he's got two kids and he's just busy. So
life.
Yeah, life gets in the way. And it's happened with me too. There's been times when, you know, all I wanted to do was sit and play Halo, but, you know, I had to do, like, job and then the job again. And then, you know, then you got to sleep occasionally.
Every once in a while it helps.
It does help, yes.
So that's going to wrap it up for the campaign part. I think that wraps it up for pretty much the podcast tonight because we've been going on again for just about 2 hours, as it seems like we've been doing for the last few shows. Welcome back, Bio. Glad the internet held up for a little while.
Yeah.
for a little bit. His squirrels are probably getting tired.
Yeah.
They've been running pretty hard for the last couple hours.
Had a couple of drops, but other than that, it's been pretty good. Just want to remind everyone again that the Latin American finals are this weekend, as of this recording, which this podcast will probably come out afterwards. So by the time you're listening to this, it's probably going to be this weekend it will be the U.S. finals, because I still got to release the last one, which actually will be releasing that tomorrow. But we have the Latin American finals, and then we have the North American finals. Those are the two left. So we've had the Australian, New Zealand ones determined. We've had the Asian ones determined, and then we had the Europe, Africa ones determined. So we have 4 of the 6 regions with finalists already in the pocket. So we got a couple more, and then of course we have the World Championship, which is near the end of March, which I'm hoping to attend. And then we have, after that, who knows? They plan on continuing the HCS. There's been some tweets about it saying that, yes, we do have plans for it afterwards. We're not exactly sure what that is, though. But we have the American North American regionals happening February 19th through the 21st. Those will obviously be big to watch. And then the World Championship Finals, which I'm excited for. Rooting on some international teams to hopefully make some good appearances, some good strong challenges for the American teams. Still hopeful for that.
Yeah, definitely.
Don't let me down.
I do have one. The 20th of February, 2016, at 5 p.m., I will be attempting to record another episode of Achieving Halo. So if you would like to be a part of it, send me a message. You can get me at Godzilla Space T on Xbox Live. Hit me up on Twitter at Godzilla Todd, on our forums, on podtacular.com, or even our Spartan Company forums. I've got a thread up there. And let me know if you can join, what your gamer tag is, and we'll get you in there. I'm looking for 3 people.
Awesome.
If you can tear yourself away from the HCS.
Or multitask.
Multitask. It only should take about an hour. So get you in and out pretty quick. And if you don't have the achievements, you get the bonus of getting the achievements too.
Yay. So. Awesome. In addition to that, make sure you check out the game nights. So we have our Spartan Company events, which are Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So Tuesdays we do arena-focused gameplay. And then Wednesdays we have Warzone. So Warzone Wednesdays and then Tactical Tuesdays. And those are open to anyone in the Spartan Company only. We are trying to keep those to be Spartan Company events so we can work together as a Spartan Company. And then we have our open event on Fridays. That's our Customs Night hosted by Mr. GT himself. And all those events happen at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time, which is 1:30 GMT a.m. next day. So if you got some Halos to play, then come on over. I do know that there are some people that have been asking for something that accommodates a little more the international. We do want to do something on Saturday. I think that might be more towards after HCS, but we'll let you guys know if and when we get that settled and get that going on a regular basis. Other than that, though, just add some people from the Spartan Company. Sometimes I'm playing on in the mornings on Saturdays, so you could hop in with me for that if I'm just doing my dailies. And there's some other people that I'm sure are on sometimes on Saturday mornings as well. So that'd probably be the best time for some of the international folks to grab us would be the mornings. But we are going to try to get some kind of official event or game night or just gaming session on Saturdays for some of the international folks that are part of our Spartan Company. So we haven't forgotten about you. It is something that we intend to do. It's just getting all the right pieces together and getting someone to actually help push it along, aka not me because I am super busy, or getting me to or pulling me aside at some point and saying, hey, do this now, if you can manage to nail me down to do something like that.
We're starting to resort to tasers.
Well, in that case,
I'm still trying to find a long range shock collar.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, most of them will only go about 1,000 yards. Feel like
getting it on me in the first place.
You sleep at some point.
That's what the stun gun's for.
I have a dog and alarm system, and a policeman that lives right across the street.
Nah.
That's all right.
All good.
I'll be look.
We'll just explain what's going on, and he'll say, I'll okay.
Be able to find the authorities. I'm sure my employer wouldn't be too happy either.
What, you wearing a shock collar to work?
That's what turtlenecks are made for.
Wow.
We'll just tell them it's a motivational tool.
Yeah, outside electronics.
Say shock therapy.
Outside electronics are not allowed in the building I work at, so it would, yeah.
I know.
Anywho, we have another little announcement. We're actually going to have some folks on for next week's show, but we are, in conjunction with Operation Supply Drop, hosting a Halo event March 4th through the 6th. So we're going to get a bunch of Halo communities together to do some stuff for charity, help highlight some of the Operation Supply Drop stuff and what they're doing, but also give a chance to highlight some of the big influential Halo communities that are out there. So it's going to be a 36-hour stream, and we're getting some really cool communities on there. So Griffball is going to be on board with us, Ready Up Live, Prairie's Joker, who does some Halo 5 speedrunnings, the community cartographers, and lots of other people getting involved with this. So we have an event that we've been planning with them for a little while, and we're going to be getting some awesome personalities and talent on there. And I heard something tonight that we might have something really, really special for people as well. There'll be giveaways. There'll be opportunities to actually participate. We're going to have a couple of Warzone and Arena sessions. We're actually going to have an Arena tournament. So you'll be able to get a team together and play in a little exhibition tournament, Arena style. Rules will probably be similar to HCS. And we're looking to maybe get some like 16 teams or something. There'll be signups coming out this weekend as of this recording. So make sure if you want to play just kind of for fun, there's nothing on the line. There might be like maybe $10 gift cards for the first place team, something like that, something to give away. But it's nothing huge. You're not going to get anything big, but it's just kind of to bring Halo communities together and raise awareness for this charity organization. But we're going to have some folks on from Operation Supply Drop for next week's show to talk about what Operation Supply Drop is, what they do with regards to the troops, how long they've been around, and all that kind of stuff. So definitely check out next week's episode. And we'll have a lot more details on what we're going to be doing during the event next week as well. So make sure you check it out. And if you are interested in getting a team together for Arena, for the little arena tournament that we're going to do, then make sure you are staying tuned to Podtacular. Once we have the forums ready, we'll be making the post, and then we'll be trying to push that out to a bunch of different teams to say, hey, let's get some teams up with this. So start building your teams now if you're hearing this, because the form will probably be up by the time this is actually posted. So get your teams together now. Finally, wrapping things up, we are part of a conglomerate of podcasts called the Podcast Network. That is podka.st. Head on over there for some likes of other great podcasts like Critzcast, Guardian Radio, The Learning Cliff, Work in Progress, and How to Murder Time. Pretty good podcasts, if I do say so myself. I've listened to pretty much all of them except for, I think, The Learning Cliff, because that one is new online, and that started started last year, and I haven't really been interested in EVE Online. So I think that's the only one I haven't listened to, but all the other ones I've listened to, and they're great quality, they're well produced, and the folks that host them are good personalities. They do the podcast really well, and if you're interested in the games that they do, then it's definitely a good source for checking those podcasts out. And it's also something to help fill the time if you're at work or at the gym. Need something to help pass the time? There are some good podcasts to listen to. So definitely check those out. Let them know that we sent you, and go support the network. That's going to wrap it up for us tonight. For everyone here, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week with hopefully some more info on the February update, the results of the Latin American finals, and our guest from Operation Supply Drop telling you about our special charity Halo event happening beginning of March. We will see you guys then. Keep on fragging trucks.